Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric, and joining me today to talk about two films is Spoiler Master Michael Kester.
Hi, hoping to be here. One of the things that I always worry about on this show is the moment when you go, hey, we need to pick some movies, we need to record some shows. And I go, fuck, that sounds difficult. And then we pick some movies, and then invariably, I go, those are good pairs. This is going to be good.
Yeah.
But then I fret and I go, oh, fuck, I don't know. That's going to be a tough, I don't know, I'm going to do that show. What am I going to do? And then I realize, oh, dude, watch the movies. It gets way easier.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. You do
I
your
panic.
Fretting.
I go, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. And then I go, that's because you haven't watched the movies. And then you watch the movies and you go, I could talk about these for approximately 22-ish minutes each.
Yeah.
So that's two things that I just covered there subtly. One is watch the fucking movies today. The movies today are Hereditary and Kill List. If you haven't watched them, watch them.
These are two secret spoiler films. Or two films about spoilers. Two films that end in spoilers. We just can't.
Ultraviolence and Family Dynamics.
Oh, there. That's nice. That's how general of you, how vague in general.
Welcome to Double Feature, Ultraviolence and Family Dynamics.
I'm going to say that there's going to be cross spoilers today.
There's got to be.
Because we can't.
There's got to be. So
it's hard to even get into this at all without spoilers.
Here's what I'll try to say is that we will attempt to not spoil Kill List during the Hereditary portion, which will be the first portion. However, once we are in firm Kill List territory, we will transfer the spoilers from Hereditary into Kill List.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That'll be about the 24-minute mark.
Like a spoiler lineage or something going on there.
Spoiler spillage. We've got spoiler spillage.
Right.
But it's one way. It's a semi-permeable spoiler membrane.
Some overflow. That's the word for that.
Yeah.
I was looking for.
Sure. You can call it that. I'm calling it my thing. But before we get to that, big spoiler. We have a Patreon.
Yeah, great news. If you go on the Patreon, you can get every fucking show we've ever done. Last time...
We'll spoil so many movies.
Last time I made a plea for some new Patreon subscribers. And look, I don't know that we're going to do this every time, but the most recent Patreon subscriber is Sean Graham. I just wanted to say hi to just this random guy who gave us $2.
Hi, Sean.
So I was like, please give $2. And someone else thought, hey, I know, I'll give $2.
Mm-hmm.
He must have been talking to me specifically.
I'm someone.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for being a someone. Appreciate that. Appreciate you is what I'm saying. Go on patreon.com/doublefeature. It's how we keep the show running. I'm actually having a lot of fucking fun pairing the movies this year.
Yeah.
We got a lot of movies that are...
Isn't it fun how when you actually like do that, it's more fun? Sorry, that was a jab.
Yeah, did you? Look, I got busy for a while with a real people job.
I know.
And then I went back to... unemployed is what that's called, I think. My filmmaking career.
Yeah.
So I can pair movies, which is really, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to try and keep that free time going.
Yeah.
By supporting Double Feature on the Patreon would be really helpful. So today, I mean, there's a lot of people wanted us to do Hereditary.
Duh.
That was a common.
Yeah. So let me point out a thing about the Patreon is a lot of people who are patrons on the Patreon, you get to tell us what movies to cover. And sometimes we listen. Inside scoop, though, I'm going to be real honest. This is an inside tip to Patreons. Don't suggest Hereditary. That's a waste of a suggestion. You know we're going to cover Hereditary.
Yeah, well, last time we did a movie called Dogtooth.
Yeah.
That was a Al Juame, I believe I'm pronouncing that absolutely wrong. He picked that movie. You didn't know we picked that movie because we were just going to do Dogtooth anyways.
Right. And I think like Ross had named Dogtooth like 4 years running.
Well, Ross names all the movies. That's the trick. Is we end up doing Nice Dreams, even though I believe Ross also asked for Dogtooth, Picnic at Hanging Rock, Good Time, and Kill List.
Great. So perfect.
And Hereditary probably, because who didn't request Hereditary?
Right.
It's pretty good.
I requested Hereditary. That's why we're doing it. You, on the other hand, did not request Hereditary.
I didn't. I did want to say, though, that the cool thing about the Patreon requests, the way we're doing them now, is they roll over. So if you requested Hereditary and then we did it and then we made fun of you and said, haha, we're going to do Hereditary anyways, well, we just move your name to the bottom of a rotating list and then... Since everyone requested Hereditary, the rotation didn't really move.
The list didn't move at all.
Yeah, right.
Everybody's second suggestion just came to the top.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but I am going to name check Tom Comey for...
That's who gets this one?
I believe Tom Comey requested Kill List.
Okay.
Which is...
that sounds better.
So we did get to move one name. We got to take care of some business here. This is another direction this can really work in everybody's advantage because we've been meaning to do Kill List forever and we just need somebody to go, I'm the representative of the film Kill List. You keep saying you will do me and you do not.
Mm-hmm.
So what the fuck, guys?
Right.
And then we can go, someone else wants to watch that too. Now there's three. Now there's three votes.
Sure.
You, me, and Tom Comey.
Well, and I'll be really honest.
It's going on the show.
If somebody didn't suggest Kill List, we would have probably hit both other Ben Wheatleys first, I think.
I know, you know, this
not
is
not the Kill List. I love Kill List, but I love Ben Wheatley, and as a filmmaker should, current films are more highly evolved, and I would have picked a High Rise or a Free Fire over a Kill List.
I know. This
if somebody
is just,
didn't go, yo, don't forget about Kill List.
This is a problem with some of my favorite films is I don't get around to watching them until we do them on double feature. And it's the same, same kind of issue. I wanted to say one other tie between the two. We could start talking about Hereditary with this. Is these are films of the non-submersible unit, I believe is what this thing is called.
Okay.
We need Ben Wheatley to host this show instead of us because he could probably talk about this. But this is it's an item for further study, and maybe this would be a good spot. I'll give you what this is. This is a concept you and I think about all the time, but didn't know there was kind of a Kubrick term for it. So I'll give you this. You tell me just what comes to your mind with Hereditary. But I guess I read Ben Wheatley talking about this. That he, when he goes into a film, he thinks about what he called the Kubrick thing of the non-submersible unit, which was to come up with your, we call them icons sometimes or set pieces, to come up with the objects in the film that are going to resonate, just the pictures in your head of, wow, that would be a fucking scene. And then to write a movie that connects those pieces rather than the opposite of writing a plot and then trying to come up with hard hitting scenes for people
sure,
to remember.
Right. Yeah.
He feels that lends itself to the cinema better. And I think Hereditary is Kill List too, but Hereditary is a really good example of, of power moments.
That reminds me of a thing we talk about all the time with David Lynch. With images and sounds that David Lynch pulls from first. But tell you what it also reminds me of is El Mariachi.
Oh, yeah.
Which is actually a more functional version of that because it's not just what set pieces or what tableaus, but it's whose truck do we have?
Sure, sure.
Let's put a truck in the movie.
Well, and again, as we'll talk about later with Kill, well, maybe we won't get to it with Kill List, but knowing who the cast was going to be in advance.
Sure.
And then writing.
Right.
That those people are in the movie. There's a lot of different ways, versions of this.
I mean, I think in Hereditary, the thing that stands out, I saw Hereditary in the theater now three times. Twice before the show and then one more time to make sure that I remembered everything. And the thing, Hereditary is a great movie, but to me, the thing that will forever stand out about Hereditary is that the movie starts and starts unfolding and you go, what are the pieces here? And then a kid gets decapitated on a phone pole.
Yeah.
And you go, oh. And it's amazing because the movie kind of, it does a thing that I love, which is it sets itself up to do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then halfway through, everything kind of narrows.
Yeah, yeah.
It sets a tone. It introduces characters. It starts the idea of a slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just sort of goes, here's what we're talking about. As if it didn't even know what was going to be discussed until the kid was decapitated, at which point the movie had laser focus and went, this is the event that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And the reason that that is so powerful to me is that, one, it's an amazing narrative tool because just like in reality, you constantly, you know, from the human experience, you are jerked around from massive event to massive event, and you don't realize when those events have petered to mundaneness until the next massive event pulls you back into focus.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like there's a certain reality there, but I also feel like the execution, pardon the word, in the movie is such that, and maybe this was a different experience. I know you had a slightly different viewing experience than I did. When this happens, it just sucked the air out of the room.
Yeah, yeah.
And something that I think you and I can definitely get behind is it sucks the air out of the room and then neglects to let you breathe for a solid 15 minutes.
Oh, sure.
It just goes, this happened and this fucking sucks. There's no comic relief. There's no, let's see what's happening with the other characters.
Yeah.
It's, this is the event. We are now going to watch all of our principal humans react to this atrocity.
Yeah, I mean, when I think back over the course of the whole film, there's the dollhouse, there's some of the fire stuff, there's all the seance-y stuff, but God, nothing does it. Like, not only the decapitation, but all the events around it.
Yeah.
And it's really treated with such care to go, I don't think I talked about this when we did It Follows back on the show. A film that looks like a lighthearted romp by comparison of the bleak oppression of Hereditary. But It Follows contains what is probably, you know, really considering what's in front of me in Hereditary, probably my second favorite shock cut in anything. And it's in the opening vignette in It Follows.
Yeah, yeah.
And it works on the fucking page. You know, I looked at that script like backwards and forwards, and I really love that moment. And it's also got such just like a fun brutality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's just a perfect bow. But man, the thing about the shock cut moment in Hereditary, the specific, you know, it's a hard cut to an image where you go, what the fuck, man? What the fuck? Your brain can't even process what it's looking at. It's not that it's necessarily capitalized on everything that's come before, but almost that it's given you just enough room to breathe and then just hit you with something that totally throws you off. The kind of thing you would trip over on a sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just, it hits you in the face. And the way that Hereditary sets that up, I know, well, you didn't snicker at shock cut, so I thought I'd just keep pushing the metaphor. It really knocks your head off. The shock decapitation of the, well, so the brutal reveal of the head itself is what I would call the shock cut moment. But I think all the stuff around that, I'd consider the whole sequence.
Mm-hmm.
That is my favorite part of the film and one of the best instances of how a shock cut is done. And I think it's because all the other elements around it are so good. We start the movie in, I guess we'll kind of shelve the sort of metaphor of the movie for a second. But we started with that obituary that just brings you right into that.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool starting a movie on an obituary. I don't think I've ever seen that done before. And so we're already in a place where like everybody's grieving and it's just kind of like, fuck guys, this is heavy. And what's about to happen is another event that doubles down on the heavy, where you already thought you were sort of on the roller coaster, you know, hitting the tough part. And I guess roller coaster is a bad metaphor because I don't know what up or down means, but I guess you're at the top of the roller coaster, mm-hmm. at the most brutal of moments. And then you notice that actually it's got this whole other part where it goes up like three times as much as it's gone up so far.
Sure.
And you're just not prepared for that. And I think the way that, you know, we start really what feels like that scene in the car. If we look at the sequence just from there, it's been given a lot of breathing room. It's been staged in the right place. It has good context.
Mm-hmm.
But we started in the car. The decapitation itself is unsettling because you can't believe what you just saw. Your eyes won't, or your brain almost won't like accept, like, because it's just like, oh, are we just going to go thunk and that's it? And I guess that's how we learn about this event. And then for him to go home and not address it,
mm-hmm.
is the greatest decision because it just lets it sit and fester. And I think it's an honest thing too, because it's a moment for him that is so shocking that he like doesn't even have the ability to do anything with it. His body fucking shuts down. And then to go to the next day, it's still festering here. It's lingering with us. We don't feel like we've addressed it at all. And then we go to the, what I would call that shock cut, which is the in your face sort of, one, it's a brutal moment in a film just as an effect shot, but also it like forces the audience to deal with this terrible thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really, you know, you've been sort of like coming back down on the roller coaster again of this whole traumatic experience. I think your head wants to heal or something from it. Your head wants to heal. And I know it's very dangerous, very treacherous describing this. And then it's just right there with the bugs and the eyes and the very real human decay. And it's just its most hideous form. And then cut back to raw emotion, the crying out for death, her experiencing beyond the worst of what could possibly happen. Just that scene of her on the floor and these crazy super wides the movie does. It's literally 100% only emotion, like her brain
mm-hmm.
cannot even function.
Yep.
And I just think the whole thing is super fucking devastating. It's really sure. hard to think of something parallel.
Oh, I can think of something equally devastating that this movie does.
it within the own movie? I was just talking about cinema as a whole, but sure.
Yeah, no, within the movie. One of the things that I think this movie does that I think this movie kind of calls attention to is this culty aspect of the film that it results in. Turns out, you know, this was all a big cult plan. One of the things that I think is really hard for me to grapple with in the world, but in Hereditary, is that the characters we watch suffer and die
mm-hmm.
and kill themselves and kill each other, we're led to believe that they are powerless to stop the things that are happening to them.
Yeah.
That there's a certain inevitability to their fate that has been preordained by a group of people who have a stronger power than them. And they have almost arbitrarily chosen these four people
mm.
because of something that they are driving toward. And so the thing that really gets me upon a repeat viewing of Hereditary is sometimes I like to play thought experiments with movies. Not always, because that's not what movies are for, turns out, all the time. But I watch a movie like Hereditary, but not Hereditary.
Uh-huh.
And I might go, what steps could have been taken to avoid the worst of this? What human, really, the way the thought experiment here.
If you're new to Double Feature, Michael likes horror movies.
Yeah. The real thought experiment here is, what would I have done that wouldn't put me in such a shitty spot, right?
Sure.
How do I avoid being the characters in Hereditary. And the true nature of the film is you don't get to. Somebody decided you're those people.
Yeah.
And that level of powerlessness is really the part of the film that fills me with dread, is that in the universe of the film, where this satanic cult actually does maintain some power,
mm-hmm.
if they were to go, you're going to have a bad time and die, I would have a bad time and die.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that sort of wrapping around that tableau event that we just talked about with the decapitation makes it so much darker of a film.
Yeah.
That these people, that on an infinite loop, essentially, you know, like a film like The Endless,
mm-hmm.
they would be doing this every time.
Yeah.
Powerless to not do this exact same shit and have this exact same miserable time.
In some ways, that's all of cinema, right?
Right. Well, that's
every film is preordained.
Yeah. And so,
but isn't it strange how little we talk about that for a medium that is so, I mean, that's mm-hmm. a little bit of just narrative anything.
But still.
Is the script repeats.
Well, that's one of the things that I think is so powerful about a film, we'd mentioned David Lynch, but a film like Mulholland Drive, where the interpretation can change from viewing to viewing. It's really the only way to break that cycle is to not actually put a fucking straight line through it.
Yeah, totally.
But I think
Hereditary's directness in not allowing for much of an interpretation.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Hereditary definitely knows what each micro piece of its story means.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of metaphorical interpretations, but I think the literal sense is, look, we know what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been one of my surprises about the movie. And I wanted to kind of wait to do it to avoid all the hot take stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really feel like that's buried in the minutiae of, oh, did you catch this piece about the lineage? And over explaining these tiny granular details, I feel like so many people miss the large, it's fucking called Hereditary.
Yeah.
And I really think looking at the problem as hereditary, looking at this as a family lineage problem, thinking about the simple metaphor of not being able to explain what you were born with or something mm-hmm. born in your blood.
Mm-hmm.
The nature versus nurture aspects of Hereditary, mm-hmm. right? That you're fucked with whatever family you were born into and the problems that existed before you. And then it's maybe broader implications on ideas like fate or just being born in the time you're born or those things. Those are, I agree with you. I think those are the most powerful parts and unique parts.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I can't think of a lot of films that are about the horror of something haunting your fucking bloodline. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It really is just what comes with you and you can do nothing about it. And the scariest thing to me is things you can do literally nothing about. Just sure. inevitabilities.
Absolutely.
Of the human condition and of your specific condition.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
The other thing that fills me with dread about this movie, and fortunately we're low on time, so we don't get to harp on it too much.
Hooray.
But one of the things that fills me with dread about this movie is how much the guy who made it seems to have hated that he made it.
Do you think he hates that he made it?
I think he hates that he made it, but not that it's so well received.
Sure, sure.
So let me put it in a nutshell. As somebody who, I watched a Q&A with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
He did a Drafthouse Q&A, and I don't need to get into it too much, but essentially, at least the vibe the guy gave off is that he fucking thinks horror movies are stupid as shit, but he knows that they sell these days, so he decided to make one because he wanted to make money. That he basically took a plot that he had and went, I guess this could be horror, and made a horror version of a story he wanted to tell. And then the thing that is so frustrating to me, Eric, is that he fucking nailed it. That he identified the tropes. He went, this is what makes a horror movie a horror movie, and then perfectly executed it in a way that really most horror movies fail for people who love horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, you know what it is to me? Is he basically what was the Penn Jillette documentary, the art documentary?
Oh, Tim's Vermeer.
Yeah, he basically Tim's Vermeered a horror movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, great, great. Thanks.
There's a 1%er, fucking 2%er joke right there. Yeah.
But you know what I mean, so right?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, but I think the outside voices, you know, a kind of first-time feature filmmaker coming at something like this, and Kill List has a bit of an outside voice for a horror film too, and I think we get a lot of vision from those people. I also think that Hereditary's pretty unique in that, well, you can try and evaluate it on the whole. Does it have ups and downs? But the same thing we would say about any time, you know, first time filmmaker making missteps or finding their voice or working in a genre that they don't even, you know, that they didn't necessarily grow up with or fetishize in a certain way, that this guy isn't going to see, you know, Hellraiser movies at the Egyptian mm-hmm. or some fucking mm-hmm. John Carpenter thing at the Draft House or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This is still, it still contains the scenes, the sequences, and the ideas that make for a great larger conversation. One that seems to not be had a lot in horror. And I've been finding myself really appreciating the voices that are outside horror for their movies that are tangentially related.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is, you know, there's no looking at Hereditary and not calling it a horror movie.
Right.
So that's to be appreciated too. I think there's a little bit of that with Kill List, but once again, I will totally pull it in
right.
and go, Kill List, an obvious horror film.
One of the things that's really funny about Kill List to me is that it is the closest to horror that Ben Wheatley has ever done. And in my head, Ben Wheatley is decisively a horror director.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He's one of my favorites. We've done on the show, A Field in England and Sightseers.
Yes.
Which probably his two most outsider films.
Yeah, although again, strangely, they had a weird murdery vibe to them.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Which we really dug on. Yeah.
No, Ben Wheatley doesn't do movies where people's lives don't end. And also today's podcast doesn't do movies where people don't kill their own children.
All right, so it's officially time for cross-spoilerage. Is that?
Yeah, yeah.
This is, look, when you saw Kill List, because you did, Podmanity, you would be listening to this, of course,
mm-hmm.
if you didn't, would you? I'm going to ruin the best thing about Kill List, so don't do that to yourself. You deserve to have this on your own. You know what? It's a hard world out there. You deserve this. Go watch Kill List. Okay, thanks for watching Kill List. All right. So it turns out you were watching a film about a ritualistic cult the whole time and you didn't even know it.
Right.
Awesome.
Yeah.
it's just like if we move this camera over here and don't show this one scene. These are my favorite kind of, we're going to cover some of these horror movies coming up
mm-hmm.
actually.
Mm-hmm.
But these are my favorite kind of horror movies, which are horror movies where you take the camera out of the place you would put it for a horror movie, put it somewhere else, and then the fact it's horror is a surprise.
Right.
Hooray. But this movie's pretty infamous for having this sort of what the fuck is that ending?
Sure.
That just, it's like an exponential curve, you know,
mm-hmm.
that just sneaks right up and approaches infinity
yeah.
toward the end there.
I love, one of the things that's really, really dynamic and it's a really fascinating trick to play on the audience is that the film opens with them drawing that symbol.
Oh, yeah.
Just in white over a black screen.
Yeah.
And then it says Kill List. And then you go, okay, I don't know what the fuck that was. Whatever, I guess it's Kill List. And then you watch.
Whatever, I'll forget that scene.
Then you watch.
A trick all movies can use and keeps working on us.
Then you watch 25 minutes of the movie, and then one character flips a mirror over and scrapes that image in the back of a mirror. And you go, oh, that's just the image from the beginning of the movie. That's the Kill List image. Right. And then flips it back over.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end it goes,
totally normal thing to do.
At the end it goes, it's a cult. And you go, oh, yeah, I didn't actually even question what that symbol meant. I just assumed that was like the Superman logo, but for Kill List.
Right, right. who is this man dragging Jane Levy back inside the house? Anyways, better forget about that scene.
Yeah.
Oh, look, Jane Levy, she's just having a good time. Yeah, there's some serious Bohemian Grove business hanging out at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
And I'm all about all of it. I'm super about it because here's my favorite thing this whole fucking movie does. And I know this is, maybe this is just a stupid thing that's just for me, but I adore it so. Is that you get, the movie's called Kill List. You get a list of people. You got to go kill the list of people. And we don't know how many names are on the list, but things just work in rules of threes. And so we're crossing off the priest and the librarian, and then we go to kill this MP. And then all of a sudden, we get the hunchback.
Mm-hmm.
Just like 7 minutes before the end of the film. Yep. Just like finding out that a three-act movie has a fourth act just out of fucking nowhere.
Sure.
Is such a pleasant surprise. It's such a happy... And sometimes movies that work in chapters do things like this. If it's an epilogue that it, we find out we get, that does the same thing for me, but the opposite, you know,
mm-hmm.
where I go, oh, an epilogue. Why did you add that?
Sure.
But just a fourth thing on the list of things that's like, surprise, you didn't know we were going here.
You didn't know that there was going to be a whole coolest. Court scene with the guy actually being a real guy.
That is the, yeah, that is the fucking coolest. So, I mean, let's, if you'll allow me, let's just fucking dive in a little deeper momentarily here. Do you think there's some room when we compare this to Hereditary? I think the big thing about the predetermination or the sort of surprise cult is that in Hereditary, it's very supernatural.
Yep.
And I don't think there's any room to ignore that.
Mm-hmm.
But in Kill List, it's not. And I wonder if there isn't maybe some room for it to be. Like, do you feel like there's hints of it being supernatural?
I mean, possibly.
Does the world of Kill List have magic powers that result from being in a cult?
It's funny because I would say no. I would say that Kill List is, that Hereditary is a movie where cults function, and Kill List is a movie where cults are crazy people.
Yeah.
But the best thing about this pair, Eric, is that the results are the fucking same. And it proves that point.
Yeah.
It goes, whether or not they have powers, they're fucking crazy.
Sure, sure.
And I think that by the secret nature of Kill List, that it's all manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
It has little to do with magic powers.
I wondered that because of the sort of like... I feel like a lot of the supernatural part lies more in the interpretation and some of the metaphor of like the open wounds in the hands and the stigmata kind of
mm-hmm.
things around that. And that last image of the film, that sort of, look, when we watch these movies, we talk about this all the time. You start liking a film and it's going on and you get really excited about it. And then the end's coming up and you're going, movie, don't fuck yourself up in the end. This is it. Here you go. And sometimes movies fuck themselves up at the very
mm-hmm.
end.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just sort of hope that the movie can just keep riding it. It's the home stretch. They're going at top speed and just don't veer off the track.
Right, right.
And this is a movie that so deliberately goes off the rails.
Yeah.
In an intentional way,
mm-hmm.
which I think is such a bold move because when it pays off, and I don't know if it's miraculous luck or what, that it pays off, but it does, and it's fucking stupendous.
Yeah.
And so that's such a cool move to make. But Jay's just, you know, he's killed his family, he's surrounded by these cult people, and then the look on his face is just impossible to read. And that's what makes me wonder, you know, about the supernatural. I wonder what the fuck happens after the end of this movie, you know?
Sure.
I actually care. I want to know.
Sure.
Like, so does he just...
You want an epilogue?
Does he just... Yeah, I know. I know, right? No, but that's the delicious part of not being fed that is forever that stays with me about Kill List.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, does Kill List 2 have him leading a cult? Or sure. Does he hate himself? Or does he just try and kill himself all the time?
Right.
Is he happy to be the newfound fucking leader of this thing, you know?
The thing for me that I love about the end of Kill List is that everybody else, even his wife,
mm-hmm.
seems to go, ha ha, it worked.
Right.
At the end.
Yeah, there, yeah, yeah.
Which, by the sheer nature of rolling credits after that moment, kind of leads you to start on unpacking the idea of, I guess that was the finish line of success.
Yeah.
And what was the point of that? You know, if I think that there is a, you know, they basically placed a roadmap that they were trying to get someone to kill their own son, you know? And in that case, you're right. I mean, is he the sacrifice, or is he the, what, I don't know, upside down Messiah? I don't know, that's the name of a Marilyn Manson song somewhere, I'm sure.
Well, we kind of dig this film where, you know, any movie where the whole town is a cult, everybody turns out to be in on a thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's been a couple of these that are really great, but usually that's the spoiler.
And Calvert.
Let's see. Yeah. Well, we did talk about Calvert. Yeah. Yeah. And as we go back through the film, you know, this is fucking delightful because it's like, as the credits roll, you're left with all these questions. You start thinking about them. And then I think some of those things upon repeat viewing are kind of answered. There's new insights to some things.
Mm-hmm.
But there's ultimately questions like, I still feel like his wife doesn't know.
You don't think so?
Well, I don't know. She has a strange reaction, but she's just being bludgeoned to death or whatever. So
sure.
It's hard to, I mean, everybody has a strange reaction when they're dying in this movie.
Sure.
It's the thing that makes it.
Yeah.
Until you know the why, oh man, the questions that are left open are the best questions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really enough just to have open-ended questions, because if it would have been more fulfilling answering the questions than pondering over them, that's a dangerous line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've tried to write that way where I go, ooh, let's leave mysteries. And sometimes they work and we talk about them. And sometimes
they're lazy.
I hand them to people and they're like, yeah, why didn't you tell me what the fuck happened with this?
Yeah.
And I try and go, no, it's a mystery. And they go, well, it would have helped me do this part and this part and this part if I just knew. What? Mm-hmm. Why is that a mystery? And I go, oh, damn, it's not a very good mystery.
Right.
And so really choosing those elements, that's the thing that I'm like personally aware of doing.
It's an interesting line to go, what is being withheld for mystique and what is accidentally lying by omission?
Totally.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's the lost conundrum.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you wouldn't have been better off knowing particular things or leaving mm-hmm. other things open. I mean, that's the whole conversation about Lost as a TV show, is people not liking the things they did answer and being wrong about them not resolving every plot hole, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like mm-hmm. some of those mysteries were better left unanswered and vice versa. So, you know, when they're going through this movie, I think there's just a few things that are left unanswered. They're real talking points, though. They leave this lingering thread, this branching tree of these other mysteries, where you start asking the implication of this, and then how does that work? And especially like the motivation, the central, sure. like why
mm-hmm.
of it all. You know, as he's going through and killing these people, the priest thanks him, which I, you know, just sort of went right on through. But that second guy, the librarian, who really sits down and goes, hey, the other guy's out of this room. I'm so happy to meet you. It's so cool who you are and what you do and all of this. And he's looking at him like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And that exists because we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're still not sure what the motivation is,
mm-hmm.
whether there's an answer to this question or not. But a scene like that acts as like this great midpoint twist where we're going, is there like a history of violence kind of thing going on here?
Yeah.
Or do we not know something this dude knows? Or does he not realize something in his past?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck is happening? So all that stuff works in a great example of a turn.
Mm-hmm.
But even once we know and we go back, then we have all those questions about the other guy. Does that guy know what's about to happen to him? Did he know? I mean, I guess he knew then, but does he know before they come in the house that he's going to die? Does he know he's going to be the guy? If he does, is he happy about it? You know, do these people, are they members of the cult? They know about him somehow. So I'm guessing they're members or something.
Mm-hmm.
Are they being punished? Were they selected for sacrifice? Are they, you know, is this like a lottery type of situation? Are they happy that they were the chosen ones? And you just don't fucking know. Was the PM even the guy shot at the end?
Sure.
You know, where it starts to fill in some holes, like why the doctor doesn't treat him and
yeah,
why that's really stilted and weird.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't tell you other things like who is a member of the cult. And I think it's better because you can, the power of that as a mystery element is you can then speculate like crazy. And it doesn't harm any of understanding the family dynamic or anything like that. You just start asking as you go through it, so what were these people's real agendas, real motivations?
Right.
Is it literally everyone on earth who's in this cult? I mean, like, who are the other, you know, who are the other people and what do they know?
I mean, it's interesting because it kind of what we were saying before is if you eliminate the supernatural element, it forces this guy down a path that results in him discovering this cult, which is not a mistake. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When he's there looking for the MP, it's they know there's going to be a cult there. They're not surprised that, I mean, he doesn't know, but the cult knows they will be where he's supposed to go.
Right.
They don't go there by mistake. It's not like they mixed up Ubers.
Does the MP know he's going to get shot?
Right. I don't know.
Is that guy the MP or is he a random dude?
He seems to.
Yeah.
He puts his arms out. If that's him, who knows?
Are they just shooting the random guy who puts his arms out?
Yeah. I mean, you shoot at him. I don't know. It's insane.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because it kind of like you were saying, you go, cool. And that's the end of the list. And if this one thing didn't just happen, we would be all set here.
Yeah. Right.
Aside from the fact that he was walking in a parade of a death cult.
Yeah.
So now there's that element, but the list is completed.
Oh, good. We resolved the list. Well, at least that's done for the day. The website is patreon.com/double feature. We're done for the day, but you can find more shows on there and a movie we did and all sorts of random madness and also just keep the show going. So that's cool. I want to thank a list of people, but before I do that, as usual, if you could maybe try giving everyone the themes for the movies, but not the movies. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. We're going to try a new way to end the show every time until we finally get one.
Great.
After 11 years.
So next week, we're going to cover two movies that are kind of about girl power and peer pressure and one-upsmanship that results in the loss of human's life. Basically, we're going to do kind of a horror movie version of the idea that women go to the bathroom together.
Yep, that definitely went on just about one sentence too long. I want to thank Aaron Shore, Abbott of Unreason, Athena Banks, Ben Acker, Charles Crawford, David Anderson, Jordan Sells, Keisha Mark Abbott, and Tom Leonard as the executive producers of the show. Sign your butt up. Patreon.com/double feature. The films, what are the films? I need to know.
We're going to do Thoroughbreds, which is new, and The Craft, which is old.
At long last.
At long last, we're going to cover The Craft and get to the bottom of the real question next week that Eric is just dying to know, which is...
They shoot horses, don't they? Oh, sorry.
Who is Fairuza Balk? Watch more fucking film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.